We're expecting more out of our food over time, more taste, sure, but we also want more assurances about origins and preparation. Note all the labels with the word free on them in recent years, cage-free, cruelty-free, and so forth. The desire to treat farm animals better led to the passage of Proposition 2 in California in the 2008 general election. It requires more living room for certain farm animals, but Prop 2 came with a long lead time. It does not take effect until January 1st of next year, and by some accounts, farmers are dragging their feet meeting that deadline. Our guest in this segment of the Jefferson Exchange is Jennifer Fearing. She's the California Senior State Director at the Humane Society of the United States. Jennifer, thank you for joining us.
Hey, thanks for having me. Good morning.
I think I can guess that the Humane Society of the United States is basically by the mission was probably heavily involved in Proposition 2's passage in the first place.
Indeed, the Humane Society of the United States was the leading proponent of the ballot measure, and I was the campaign manager for that ballot measure. So you've got that. You've got us pegged.
So give us the background on Prop 2, specifically how it came about and what it was supposed to do. What is it supposed to do since it hasn't taken effect yet?
Sure. Well, Prop 2 was a modest measure that was placed by voter signature on the statewide ballot, as you mentioned, in November of 2008. And the measure was very simple in its terms. It created a standard that said that egg-laying hens, breeding pigs, and veal calves had to be given enough space to stand up, turn around, and fully extend their limbs without touching the sides of their enclosure. So it's what's called a performance standard, which is a consistent way of designating kind of animal welfare standards in state laws around the country, particularly here in California. And it was approved by 63.5% of those who voted in that election, and it was a majority of voters in 47 of California's 58 counties approved the measure. So it was a very, very popular measure. In fact, at that time, it received more yes votes than any citizen initiative in California history. So, indeed, people do care deeply about just providing basic welfare standards for these confined animals.
I'm just curious, out of that, when you mentioned 47 out of the 58 counties, were the 11 counties that did not vote in favor of Prop 2, were they generally agricultural counties?
They were, but you would have been surprised which of many of the agricultural counties that are in the 47 who approved of it. And in fact, it was a closer call in a lot of those counties than you might expect. For example, in Fresno County, the measure received 49.5% of voter support. So this certainly isn't an initiative that we would suggest falls into a characterization that Los Angeles and San Franciscans, are imposing an urban standard on rural counties. This had broad approval throughout the state.
And when you mention the performance standard, though, the discussion about how the sows and the chickens and the veal need to be able to extend their limbs without touching the sides of their enclosure, I mean, there must be a standard that has to work, though. Otherwise, you're talking about measuring for each individual animal or something, aren't you?
Well, absolutely, there's a standard that works. And in fact, throughout the campaign back in 2008, there was no disputing. Both sides within that campaign, both the egg industry, which opposed it, and humane and environmental and public health organizations that supported it, all concurred that cage-free production for eggs would undoubtedly meet the standard for Prop 2. Every newspaper editorial board in this state, which whether they supported or opposed Prop 2, acknowledged that was the standard. And that's been the encouragement of our organization and others to get California egg farmers into compliance with that before this January 1. Enforcement date.
So why the January 1 enforcement? This is 6 years plus, essentially, to get everything on track with Prop 2. So why such a long lead-up?
Well, it was done in recognition of we acknowledge considerable kind of transition time and cost associated with moving from, a capital-intensive caged setup that every egg producer in California had. And we wanted to recognize that, ripping out those cages and moving to a different model was going to take some time. So it was actually meant to mitigate the, economic concerns and, help egg producers have the time to make that transition. Unfortunately, they've used that time to litigate rather than to transition. And that's why we're, encouraging a really big conversation about this now.
And how much courtroom activity has there been, and did it start soon after the passage of Prop 2?
It did start soon after. There have been four lawsuits all of which have been unsuccessful thus far. One state lawsuit and one federal lawsuit are on appeal, but these they are not having any success in persuading any court, any judge, that there are issues with understanding how to comply with Prop 2. In fact, one judge went so far as to opine, to write in his opinion, that it does not take the acumen of Columbo to know whether chickens are being given enough room under this provision or not.
Not every day you get a judge making a ruling from the bench that quotes a TV detective.
It certainly is not every day.
Well, in addition to the long lead-up time, so essentially this passed in November of 2008, doesn't take effect until January 1 of 2015, was there any set of check-in provisions, though, or benchmarks to be met along the way?
No, there were not. There have been a lot of advances on the corporate and retail front that should have encouraged egg producers. Many companies over, food service providers, food processors, major companies like Hellman's, Burger King, Compass Group, Aramark, and Sodexo, which are major food service providers, have, since the passage of Prop 2, have taken strong stances against the confinement of egg-laying hens and have moved to transfer all of their egg product purchases to cage-free. We had certainly hoped that creating that kind of retail and market environment, you know, generating more demand for the product required under Prop 2 would have been the exact kind of constructive incentive that egg producers in California would have needed to make that move.
So in a sense, you wanted to follow the vote at the ballot box with a vote by pocketbook, in essence, spending money on things that were things like cage-free. People would show their pleasure there, and the producers would adapt.
Absolutely. And, you know, that was one of the bigger criticisms, you know, that more compelling criticisms of Prop 2, to be candid, was the idea that people would, you know, walk into a ballot box and pull the lever for an idea like this, but drive home and stop at, you know, Costco on the way home and buy the cheapest egg. You know, we wanted to follow up with that. We recognize the need for market demand. And part of that is, you know, driven, of course, by the pricing. And it's confusing for customers. But, you know, the egg industry's own economist shows that converting to cage-free egg production costs less than a penny per egg. So you should expect to see, you know, a price difference between conventional eggs and cage-free eggs of around about 12 cents if you had a fully competitive egg market and, you know, profits were driven, you know, down to a low level. Instead, what we see, obviously, as consumers in the market are cage-free eggs that are priced at double, you know, some crazy, you know, places. Sometimes it's triple. So consumers actually have a hard time being able to exercise, you know, their ethics here without being, you know, because they're not being given prices that are affordable. We want to see, you know, more widespread use of cage-free eggs and going directly to corporations who are some of the biggest buyers to help try to move that market.
How do you account for that in the identifying of 12 cents per carton more? 12 cents per dozen more than for cage-free mm-hmm. eggs, and yet the price is much higher than that. Are they being positioned as sort of a boutique sort of thing still?
It's absolutely what economists would call an ethical premium, right? The producers and the retailers have an opportunity to take advantage of someone's sort of ethical choice, because at current, it's an ethical choice everywhere because there's no law, in effect, requiring, setting the welfare standards for the chickens who lay those eggs. So right now, it's just up to the consumer to make a choice based on the labeling and based on their preferences. And the market will bear people once they've decided to shun confined chicken eggs from confined chickens. They have limited choices, and you know that creates an opportunity for profit taking by companies.
Jennifer Fearing is our guest on the Jefferson Exchange. She's the California Senior State Director for the Humane Society of the United States and was the campaign director for Proposition 2, which is our discussion topic here. Proposition 2 was meant to give more living room for some farm animals in California and takes effect on January 1st of 2015. You can join us here on the Jefferson Exchange anywhere in our listening area. The phone number is 800-838-3760. And in the Rogue Valley, our local number is 541-552-6. Our email address is jx@jeffnet.org. I'm sure one of the original points of opposition was the cost of conversion then. And was there a dollar figure bandied about? And was there a competing dollar figure that you offered back?
There was no total dollar figure offered by opposition. You know, there certainly were concerns raised about the cost. But as I mentioned previously, the egg industry's own economic analysis that we, you know, saw has showed that conversion was feasible and available at a price. And we were more than happy to talk with voters and say to them, look, Prop 2 is not free. Providing animals, you know, room to move will cost us a little bit. But are you willing to pay a penny per egg to, you know, ensure that animals raised for food at least aren't crammed into tiny, barren cages where they can express none of their natural behaviors for their entire lives? And so we were straight with California voters about the cost of this. But, you know, it's probably not entirely surprising that on the other side of Election Day that, you know, egg producers, as, you know, business people as they are, have sought to constrain the requirements of compliance as much as possible. And as I mentioned, that's been through litigation, through regulatory efforts, that we've dealt with some legislative initiatives, you know, and our primary goal is to give California voters what they ask for, and that's a more sustainable future for all of us.
And again, it affected egg-laying hens, veal, and pigs, right?
Correct. Although in California, the production of breeding pigs, the use of breeding pigs and veal calves are pretty limited. So in California, we're predominantly talking about an impact on egg producers.
That's exactly my question then, if it was going to be much more extensive involving the hens.
Yes, it certainly is.
All right.
There are about 19 million egg-laying hens in production at any given time in California. So either the fifth or sixth largest egg production state.
Wow, as big as California is, or at least as many people as live there, would have thought it could have been close to number one.
Well, the vast majority of the country's eggs are raised by chickens, come from chickens who live in Iowa, as it would be. It turns out, again, economics drives a lot of this. The cost of shipping grain is actually heavier than eggs. So it's cheaper to raise chickens in the Midwest near the grain and ship the eggs here.
All right. So just dollars aside, I mean, so we got 19 million egg-laying hens involved here. And are we talking about having to convert all of those cages over? I mean, or get rid of 19 million cages? Some of them were cage-free already, right?
Well, a small percentage, yes. A small percentage are cage-free, free-range, organic, or pasture-raised. There's probably less than 10% of California egg production are already in those clearly compliant style production facilities. But the vast majority of those hens are living six to eight, you know, in a cage that gives each hen less space than a letter-size sheet of paper. That's what the current industry standard is. That's 67 square inches of space. And, yes, under Prop 2, they could move to a cage-free environment, which is still enclosed. So to be clear, that isn't requiring outdoor access for chickens. And there have been incredible innovations since the mid-2000s in cage-free production that allow farmers to take advantage of vertical space. And they're what called aviary systems that, if you or I were to look at them, they look like very tall bookshelves that extend from the floor to the ceiling, and they're open. So it allows chickens to perch, to fly about, to choose kind of a different height at different times. There are nesting boxes along the sides of the walls that the chickens will be drawn to go lay in, which can have converter belts. So there are very innovative systems that have been developed and that are in use throughout Europe that are exactly the kind of system that California egg producers should be moving to.
I mean, you talk about the 67 square inches under the existing conditions. I mean, is there a number then, isn't there, for how much space a hen should have now under Prop 2?
You know, it really depends on what we would call the stocking density of any enclosure. I mean, even a building would be considered an enclosure. You could theoretically, pack too many chickens in a building to be compliant with Prop 2, even without cages per se. The egg industry utilized a professor at UC Davis during the campaign who estimated that it would take about 216 square inches per bird to comply with Prop 2. And at that type of space, cage-free production is far more economically valuable, in part because of what we talked about earlier, the willingness of consumers to pay a little more for a welfare system like that. It's not clear that consumers are willing to pay more for a slightly bigger cage.
Forgive me for not knowing this, but laying hens, do they become meat later on? I mean, are they sold as chicken in the store shelves, or is that a whole different category of bird there?
Yeah, so it's two totally different types of chickens that are, you know, whole different strains and breeds of chickens. And in fact, yes, you're right. It's two separate. The poultry that ends up becoming meat are quick-growing birds of a different breed that are grown. They're grown, interestingly enough, entirely on the floor in barns and are never put in cages. And they have roughly 2 to 3 month lifespan. That's how fast they've now been bred to grow. The egg-laying hens live up to 18 months in almost all of them in these cages. And they are considered what's called spent hens at the end of that production cycle. And because of the relative cheapness and the quote, better meat that comes from the meat birds, there's almost no market now for spent hens. Sometimes they can become, you know, sold for to make like low-grade cat food or other animal feed, but typically they're just slaughtered and rendered.
The reason I asked the question, though, is because we've seen, and they're pretty easy to find on the internet, particularly among the places that are concerned about the concentrated animal feeding operations, the very big dark sheds that the meat chickens are raised in. But there was nothing in Prop 2 about them?
Correct. Well, Prop 2 was focused on extreme confinement. That was the fundamental kind of premise, is giving animals room to move. And while we certainly have serious concerns about the, you know, animal welfare conditions for chickens raised for meat, confinement is not as big of concern. It's not the primary welfare issue that they are facing, whereas it is the top contributor to suffering for animals in the egg-laying hen industry.
Jennifer Fearing's our guest on the Jefferson Exchange. She's with the Humane Society of the United States as California Senior State Director. She was the campaign director for Proposition 2 back in 2008, which goes into effect January 1st of next year. And we're talking about the fact that compliance seems to be lagging, that farmers aren't necessarily ready for cage-free birds in their egg-laying operations. Join us on the exchange at 800-838-3760 or 541-552-6782 or by email jx@jeffnet.org. So what happens if January 1st, 2015 arrives and you've still got laying hens in small cages?
Well, we're going to have an interesting circumstance. One thing we haven't talked about, but that's important to mention as a dynamic here, is that shortly after the passage of Prop 2, California lawmakers came together to pass a bill that expanded the provisions of Prop 2. Prop 2 related to the in-state production of eggs. And one of the other criticisms of Prop 2 was that it didn't apply to all eggs sold in the state. So the concern was out-of-state egg producers could continue to use battery cages and ship their eggs in and sell them here, and California producers would be operating at a serious disadvantage. So a bill was passed in 2010 and signed by Governor Schwarzenegger that required that all shell eggs sold in the state be produced in compliance with Prop 2 by the same enforcement date. So one of the things that could happen come January 1, if California producers are recalcitrant, is that we would see a dramatic increase in the shipment in, the import of eggs. There is enough cage-free production nationally to sell enough eggs here in California. It's certainly not our preference to have it move in that direction, and this would have been a choice that California egg producers would have made. But we're really hoping, part of why I'm excited that you've asked me on this call, and we're trying to have a bigger conversation here, is our goal is to have the California egg producers in compliance and in a position to be successful selling the kinds of eggs that California consumers want by the deadline.
Were there any provisions within Prop 2 to help finance the changeover?
No, there were not. The way that Prop 2 would work would be that as we would anticipate it, was that penny per egg would be passed along, that cost could be passed along to consumers. And again, we had a straightforward conversation with voters at that time that voting for this was voting to, you know, add that cost in exchange for the improved conditions for the animals.
And then so if January 1st arrives, they're still in battery cages, are there fines then for the egg producers?
There are fines, and there is the capacity for any peace officer in the state of California to enforce the provisions of Prop 2. But again, we feel confident that California, you know, egg producers and farmers in general are interested in, you know, being in compliance with state law, trying to avoid an outcome where we're seeking enforcement.
So, all right. Any indication of how many changeovers have happened already, though? I mean, rather than focus on what hasn't happened, what has happened?
Well, at least one major egg producer, San Diego County egg producer, recently announced that he's begun to convert his entire egg production facility to cage-free systems, and that it's his understanding that that's what he is necessary under the standards set by Prop 2. So that is encouraging. And I mentioned earlier a set of retailers who have shifted their buying preferences, and recently a major company by the name of Bon Appetit Management Company, which is a food service company with more than 500 locations, they recently announced that they are fully in compliance with the law and within California are using exclusively cage-free eggs already. So certainly the writing is on the wall, and you know, our hope is that the foot dragging will stop and the production will begin.
All right, so it looks like there are some people out there getting ahead of this that might be enough to convince the others to go along and get in line.
That's our hope. You know, the challenge, again, has been the preference, so it would seem, for litigation. And we're also, you know, hoping that before the end of the year, the last two appeals will run out from the litigation perspective and pave the way.
I sense we'll probably talk to you again later in the year and see how compliance with Prop 2 is going along as we get much closer to that January 1st, 2015 deadline.
That.
Jennifer Fearing, again, the California Senior State Director at Humane Society of the United States. Thank you so much for joining us today on the Jefferson Exchange.
Thank you.
All right. That'll do it for this hour of the Jefferson Exchange. Richard Blanco, the inaugural poet, coming up in hour number 2.